Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time, FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby, come on.
It's your girl, Christina Reyes with Del Fox. Before I get started, I want to let the audience out there listening to know the reasoning behind Del Fox. This show is about conversations related to what's taking place with the prison system, the effects that it has on all parties impacted by the system, such as those who are survivors of violence, individuals incarcerated, families, and communities. My goal is bringing more awareness to the side effects of prison and helping those who aren't aware to become educated, because this can happen to anyone. In today's show, we have Celeste Trusty, who is the Pennsylvania State Director, and Maria Geldner, who is the Deputy Director of Policy at FAM. Both these ladies are powerhouses, are doing things to change the system currently. When it comes to incarceration, can I just let you all know, not only are these women beautiful and independent, but they are also single. So make sure you guys holler. The first thing I want to say is thank you both for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be on Jail Talk. Now, can I start with asking this question to both of you ladies? But what has brought you into the work of working with the population of those who are currently incarcerated? And I guess either of you can answer, but I don't know if you want to go Celeste first.
Sure. So, I mean, really, I have been very interested in the need to reform our system for a very long time. I have family members who have been impacted, and I really grew up understanding the difference that some people feel when they enter the criminal legal system versus other people. And so I always knew there was something that needed to change. And so as I got older and kind of figured out what I really wanted to do, I realized this was an amazing kind of fit for me, working on trying to affect change around the sentencing laws that keep people in prison when they don't necessarily need to be there any longer. So I'm really excited to be able to, you know, get up every day and do this work. It doesn't feel like work most of the time because it is so fulfilling, because, you know, even though we don't always get wins, and we do get those wins, those things are so incredible to see. Even when one person is able to come home, it makes such a difference for our community. So that's kind of how I got into it and why I love doing this work.
How about you, Maria?
Thanks, Christina. It's an honor to be with you, my friend. And I do want to say to your audience that I recently dipped my toe back into the dating pool, and I quickly pulled it out again. So I don't know about all that. But as far as what led me to this work, I joined FAM about a year and a half ago from the Federal Defenders. I was a federal criminal defense attorney. Prior to that, I was a practicing criminal defense attorney in Florida, on the Gulf Coast, in Fort Myers, Florida, and also in Queens, New York. And I came to policy from being an attorney because although I was able to protect the rights and the dignity of thousands of families all over this country, one case and one person at a time is not a way to make change on a broad scale. And so my hope that was by coming to policy, you know, instead of being in that box that you're kind of in the assembly line that is the court system, that I could work in policy with other people like Celeste, with Kevin Ring at FAM, and with thousands of other people doing this across the country to actually poke holes in the boxes. And I became a criminal defense attorney for many reasons, but in large part because I had had a wonderful, wonderful experience with a public defender who represented my loved one, who was in and out of prison for many years as the result of a really horrendous drug addiction, from which he ultimately died of overdose. And while there were times that when he was incarcerated, and to be frank with you, I was relieved that I knew he wasn't dead, you know, I knew he was theoretically physically safe in prison and wasn't, you know, lying in a gutter somewhere. I can also say prison did nothing for him. In fact, the opposite. You know, he was denied permission to move to a new location that would have been healthier for him. He was sexually assaulted in prison, something that is very difficult for anyone to talk about, and often extremely difficult for men to talk about or acknowledge that that even happens in prison, which it does all across the country all the time. And so those experiences are what led me to doing this. And I got to meet, you know, and have gotten to meet amazing people like you. So it's wonderful work.
Well, I love both of you ladies. And, you know, just from some of the words that you just said right now, how do you feel the system can be changed within the prison? Because we're talking about some of your experiences also with, like, loved ones that you guys personally have had that have gone through the system. But besides that, you guys work on a wide range of, you know, helping other individuals and families, you know, who have people that are currently incarcerated. What do you think should be in place? Because I know that we always talk about, you know, putting people into prison, but we're not really talking about the rehabilitation process. So what do you feel like would be beneficial when it comes to that?
Well, before we even get to the rehabilitation process, we need to just do a lot of work immediately to make sure that our prisons are safe and humane before we can even get to the part about rehabilitation, because the situation that we're in right now is that they are very dangerous places. We are constantly hearing reports, not just from Pennsylvania, not just from people we know, but all across the country, very similar complaints that prisons are overcrowded, that they're dangerous for incarcerated people as well as correctional staff, that there is rampant sexual assault happening, that sexual assault and abuse is normalized in many, many prisons, that people can't afford the things that they need, they're not given the things that they need, that they're incarcerated very far from their loved ones, and that it's very difficult for them to stay in, you know, relationship and communication with their loved ones. So those, you know, those are kind of universal in prisons and county jails throughout this country. And we work a lot on prison oversight. We have some model legislation on our website, as well as principles for independent oversight. You know, if anyone listening to this is in a jurisdiction, not just Pennsylvania, but across the U.S., where you're thinking, you know, does my prison have that? Could I work to get some independent oversight? Contact us and talk about that, because we can tell you what's been done, where, what works, what doesn't work. And probably one of the most important, really basic things is that no human being or system like a prison can police itself, right? That's just not in our human nature. And so when we talk about independent oversight, one of the main hallmarks of that is to make sure that if an incarcerated person, a staff person, a family member, if somebody has a complaint about the conditions in the prison or something going on, that you're not just reporting that to that person's peers or their boss, that you're reporting it to an independent ombudsperson or agency that's not, you know, part of the establishment, right? Because then they have a reason and kind of bias to not independently investigate it. So that's one of the hallmarks of our prison oversight legislation. And there's a lot more to it than that. So I encourage folks to check out our website at famfamm.org.
Well, thank you, Maria.
And I, you know, to kind of piggyback off that, you know, when you look at the people in prison, we're talking about these conditions. One of those conditions that we constantly see is overcrowding. And, you know, you asked a great question about rehabilitation. Well, you know, basically as human beings, we all have that capacity to change, right? Even without, you know, drastic intervention, we all have the capacity to change. And so our, you know, in Pennsylvania, so many of our sentencing laws don't actually reflect that, right? So many of our people who are creating the overcrowding issues in prison simply just don't need to be there. And that would also, if we were able to find different ways and pathways for relief for folks who don't need to be there, our prisons would be less crowded. They would be able to be safer. Our, you know, people who work there would be able to be safer. We would be able to have resources allocated to the things that we do know that people who are incarcerated and their families need during that experience.
Thank you for sharing that, Celeste. I also want to know, because I know you've been kind of like working with SAM for so many years, and you kind of recently left from working with the Board of Pardons and came back to SAM, which I'm so excited about that, because you are an exceptional woman to be back at SAM and the team. And I just wanted to know, like, what story has influenced you the most? You and Maria.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, I have to say, outside of just, you know, personal experience with family members and what that meant, I have a dear friend who is incarcerated. He's been incarcerated for decades, and, you know, he's actually innocent, but he's been incarcerated for decades, and I would go and visit him, and he would give me such incredible advice. And one of the things he actually said to me was, you know, that he appreciates the advocacy on his behalf, and he really appreciates, of course, how, you know, I was getting the pension going and, you know, making sure that he had what he needed, making sure that, you know, we would write letters and things like that. But he said, you know, my family really needs attention too. And, you know, we need to make sure that as advocates, we're really making sure that we're including the families, because their experience is also really, really traumatic. And so that's kind of what led me to SAM. And so I'm so glad that I'm able to come back to SAM and you know, work with this team again, work with Maria, work with the incredible folks on the ground in order to, you know, really kind of raise awareness.
Maria, would you like to elaborate on that as well? Like, what has been one of those stories that has influenced
your work with SAM?
Sure. There are really too many to count, but I'm going to tell you a recent one that's a sad one, although I could tell you many that are beautiful redemption stories, but I'm going to tell you a sad one to highlight the urgency of the work, which is that it's very important to me to respond to every single piece of correspondence that I get from a prison. And as you can imagine, that's very difficult to do. We get hundreds and hundreds of letters from people in Pennsylvania, and I try very hard to make sure that I respond to everyone in a Pennsylvania prison that writes to me. And I recently got behind on that list because there's so much good work that we're doing. I also have, you know, small children, and I'm a single mom, and it's busy, and I got behind on that stack. And when I finally opened the stack, I opened a letter from a gentleman named Larry, and Mr. Larry wrote to me and said, you know, I am 70 years old. I have terminal 4 cancer, or, you know, stage 4 cancer. I'm very ill. Is there anything that you can do? Is there any hope with these medical bills? And the letter was dated from last April, and I didn't open it until probably 2 months ago because I was so behind.
Wow.
And so I had a strange feeling. I wrote back Mr. Larry. I went to go send the letter back. And then I said, you know, let me just look him up and make sure that he's still there. And he was not in the inmate DOC lookup tool on the Department of Corrections. And I had a feeling that I knew what that meant, but I didn't really want to look at it. So I had the letter addressed, ready to go out. I put it by my back door and I said, let me just go to bed. Like, I can't look at this right now. And I walked away and I immediately came back and started doing some digging. And it turned out that Mr. Larry had died of his stage 4 cancer in the intervening period. And I still have next to my desk the addressed stamped letter in which I wrote back to him and said, here's what we're doing to expand medical and geriatric relief. I can try to hook you up, you know, with a free attorney from the Abolitionist Law Center. There's some wonderful work and attorneys over there. And it's sitting there as a reminder every day about the urgency of my work and why, on a more practical level, I need to do better in responding to people sooner. I did find out, so that your listeners know, that he was in fact represented already by those wonderful attorneys at the Abolitionist Law Center. Shout out to them. They're phenomenal.
Amazing.
That was wonderful. And unfortunately, he couldn't get out in time. But that is happening every day with hundreds and thousands of people in this state and this country. And people are dying every day. So we need to remember that at all times.
Yes, I'm glad that you brought that point up, because we do need to work on getting people home on compassionate relief. It takes more money to invest into these prisons to keep somebody who is elderly inside of them. So we need to figure out ways that we can bring them back out into society. Now, I did have a question for Celeste. Now that you're back at FAM, what are the new policies that you guys are currently working on?
Yeah, so we're really, really excited because we did a poll and we got 79% support for felony murder reform here in Pennsylvania.
That's wow.
Unheard of, especially when talking about criminal justice reform, and especially when people, you know, have caused harm. And so this is something that we have been able to see huge bipartisan support for. We even had PDAA, the District Attorneys Association, in support of felony murder reform as well. This is something that, you know, as you mentioned, it does cost so much money to have people incarcerated as they age, as they get older. But we know that people age out of crime. We know that there are so many people who are incarcerated right now who are serving these excessive, mandatory life without parole sentences, and they simply don't need to be there anymore. And as they age, it just costs taxpayers. That's us. More and more and more money. I think each of us on this call, and probably, you know, some people in the audience, know people who are incarcerated who simply don't need to be there. And instead, if they were able to come home, our community would be stronger. They would be able to be mentors in our communities, and our tax dollars could be reinvested into things that we know help make our community stronger also.
Ladies, so I had a question. This question was for Maria. You know, what do you feel needs to be changed about the clemency process? And, like, what is FAM currently working on? Because I know it's such a tedious process for a lot of individuals. And for those who aren't aware about clemency, there's less than a handful of people that are actually granted the clemency to come home and to be a part of their communities and to be back with their families. So what changes do you feel are needed, and what are you guys working on currently so people out there can hear?
Great question. I'm gonna frame this for a minute, and then I'm gonna get back to clemency in just a moment. But I want people to understand the term second look legislation, or second look laws, or taking a second look at people. And basically what Celeste was talking about is what we're working on nationwide in a variety of ways. So what FAM is advocating for, big picture, long term, with all of our work, is that we move from a system where on your day of sentencing, like we have now, the judge, the camera, takes a snapshot of you that day in terms of your sentencing, and then that's it. Forever. That snapshot is frozen in time. It doesn't matter how you change as a person. You know, it doesn't matter how much time goes by. It doesn't matter if the victim's opinion changes. It doesn't matter if society's opinion changes. You are stuck in that frozen snapshot. What we're trying to move to with Second Look is saying that's not how humans work, right? Newsflash, we change, we grow up, we age out of crime, we rehabilitate, we get better, we redeem ourselves. And so the way that we are trying to change the system is through all these methods, saying you know, sentences should be reviewed regularly. We should have medical release. We should have geriatric release. We should have review for people who were, you know, less than 26 when they committed the crime because their brains weren't done developing. People with felony murder, all of the above. So that brings us forward. So I want folks to understand that term second look. That's what it means. Take a second look. Don't let it be frozen in time. That brings us to clemency. So clemency in Pennsylvania is an umbrella term that covers both pardons and commutations. Pardons are kind of like an expungement. It's when you're on the street and you want to clear your record typically. Commutation is also part of clemency. And that is when you're in prison, typically, and you want to shorten your prison or your parole sentence. You're actually trying to shorten the sentence. So clemency in Pennsylvania is kind of like getting struck by lightning or winning the lottery. It's not used enough. We don't grant it enough. Although our previous Lieutenant Governor Fetterman, Celeste, when she was Secretary of the Board of Pardons, did a phenomenal job, and Governor Wolf leading the way for the last 8 years, really expanded it. However, it still needs to be expanded a lot because, like I said, it's still very much like winning the lottery. But it's so special because it's the only second look mechanism that we have in Pennsylvania. And so it's very, very special to FAM. It's very special to our prison population because it's literally the only hope they have to not die in prison. And so in terms of improvement, there's a lot of improvement, and we have it laid out on our website. I can send folks resources on this of how you can get involved. And I guess the big things are that we want to see the board go back to the historical norm, which was only needing a majority vote to recommend people with extreme and life sentences for commutation. Right now, you need a unanimous vote. And I've heard my amazing colleague Celeste say many times, we couldn't even get a unanimous vote on the Board of Pardons. You know, she and I, that's a very difficult thing to get. So we need to go back to what it was for most of our history, which is only requiring a majority vote. We also really want to see, you know, in the shorter term, the board and the current Lieutenant Governor Austin Davis make some process improvements, like just tell people why they're denied. You know, that shouldn't really be controversial or a big thing. And I think that the Lieutenant Governor and the current secretary are looking into this. We've asked them to look into it, and we've asked them to just tell people why they're getting it or not getting it, because that would say, okay, I need more time in, I need more classes, I need more this, I need more that. And there are a lot of other things that can be done to improve it. We have them all listed on our website. I urge folks to reach out to us to take a look. And because Celeste did just leave that role, I do want folks listening to know that I, Maria, handle all things clemency for Pennsylvania. So please feel free to come to me with that. Thank you.
And thank you for sharing that, Maria. One question that I did have is, how can those that have loved ones on the inside get this information from FAM? Is it listed on the website? Is there a direct contact that they can reach out to? Like, how can people be aware? Because I don't think enough people know about this.
Yeah, so it's very, very important for us to do outreach to folks inside and stay connected. So the number one way that we stay connected to folks inside is through our families. But we've also do a ton of direct outreach. So we publish legislative updates regularly in Greater Friends, which is the Prison Society's inside newsletter. We publish regularly in Daughters, which is a joint publication of Sarita Miller, a woman incarcerated with life at SCI Muncie, along with Let's Get Free, the Women and Trans Defense Committee out of Pittsburgh. So they publish our contributions regularly so that folks inside get them. We do some direct mailing to folks inside, including about the Visit a Prison campaign, which we'll tell you soon. And like I said, I also respond personally to every single letter that I get from a Pennsylvania prison. And if folks truly cannot find someone, don't have a loved one to print them, you know, one of our materials, I will try to print and send them something that they need from our website.
And another thing we do really well at FAM is, you know, help folks tell their stories too. So you know, outside of the direct outreach we do, the legislative work that we do, we also do really well at helping folks tell their stories. And we have an incredible series of stories called Free to Succeed that highlights so many people that have been free and are now doing incredible things for our community. Some of them came home like Freedom and Lee Horton. They've been highlighted. I know Miss Naomi has also been highlighted. So if you look at the Free to Succeed series on FAM, you know, definitely try to share those on your social media. Share them with your friends and your family. And we really need to be showing our legislators, our community members, our friends, that people, if we give them the opportunity, they can be free and they can be successful and they can contribute to our community. So, you know, storytelling is also really, really a big part of what we do. And that's one reason why we love to show that there are people who are incarcerated that need help and are doing incredible things, but also people that have been freed through some of the efforts that, you know, some folks have done that are doing some great work.
Thank you, ladies, for both sharing that information. I did have a question. I wanted to know, based off of your numbers and you guys just working in this area, like how many people have been able to come home, and that number being men and women, through the clemency or through the commutation process? And I would say even like in the year of 2022.
So Celeste can correct me if I'm wrong, I think, on this statistic, but essentially what we've seen is that back in the day, you know, like decades ago, clemency was really common. And in the 70s, there was up to, you know, 250 people commuted from very serious sentences. And then you saw in the 80s, 90s, 2000s that it basically dried up to like zero people. Nobody got commutation. Under Governor Wolf, I believe it's somewhere around 46 people, close to 50 lifers were commuted from life sentences. The vast majority were men. There were not very many women, but there are some women in the mix, including Avis Lee and Naomi Blunt Wilson. And so, yeah, roughly around 50 in Governor Wolf's 8 years, which is more than the previous many decades combined.
So what can the people out here that are listening do to kind of change the system so that we can get more people out on commutation without it being a process that's so tedious? Because, again, for me, I feel like there's people that have been incarcerated. They have rehabilitated themselves. And I also feel like because you have a community sometimes where victims are unaware of the progress that those that are incarcerated have done, you know, when they get brought into these conversations, they're kind of being judged all over again. And they're not being judged on the fact that they've developed and they have grown while being in prison, when it's been such a hard time for them to actually do that. Just because when you're in prison, you're warehoused.
Yeah, so one of the ways that we work on that, both with clemency and then with all of our legislation, because we see that all over the place, Christina, we see that, you know, sometimes, not always, but a lot of times decision makers like the Board of Pardons, like, you know, judges, parole boards, whoever it is, that they're not always considering the person today, that they're really overemphasizing, you know, only the seriousness of the case and the facts of the crime. And FAM will never say that that's not important. That is, of course, very important. It just shouldn't be the only consideration. And when you are evaluating the person, best practice is to consider the person today. And unfortunately, we don't see that the person today is always considered, like you're saying. So the way that we try to address that, and that we're trying to address it with the clemency board, with the Board of Pardons, is again with this reason, you know, giving reasons. And so what we did at FAM last year was we said, hey, look, this isn't terribly difficult. We will actually make you a checklist of all the factors that you should consider under the law and under common sense. And so we did. We actually made a checklist that we published in Greater Friends and Daughters. It's on our website. We sent it to the Board of Pardons. We sent it to the governor. We sent it to the lieutenant governor. I've shared it with the current administration. outlining all of the factors, including rehabilitation, age of the crime, who the person is today, medical issues, mental health issues, everything anyone would possibly want considered is on this list. And our hope is that by building in things like that into clemency, into all of our legislation, that we slow down the decision makers, and that way they don't just make a snap decision. They're kind of forced to go slower and really think about, okay, in order to answer this checkbox, right, or give points to this, I have to think about who are they today and not just speed through the process and say, oh, well, that crime's too bad, we're not going to consider it. So that's how we're trying to address that, Christina.
Thank you for sharing that, Maria.
I was going to follow up with what Maria was saying, but that's, you know, Sam's whole issue with mandatory minimums, right? It doesn't allow judges to have that discretion. It also doesn't allow that second look that Maria was talking about before. So I just wanted to, you know, mention that's basically why Sam is in existence, right? We totally disagree with the fact that people are judged in that snapshot, as Maria said, once at the time of the offense and then never again.
I love that. I had a question for you. Being the Pennsylvania State Director, what are some of the policies or the things that you're trying to change with FAM in the state of Pennsylvania that people can get involved in?
Sure. So, you know, I mentioned felony murder earlier. I know Maria mentioned medical parole. That's another thing we're really looking at. One of the things we want to think about is how can we really look at our prison population and find ways to pass legislation that will allow as many people as possible the opportunity at relief, right? It doesn't mean that everybody is going to get that second chance, but the opportunity for relief. So when you look at our prison population and the way that we spend our tax dollars on correction, there are so many things that we can look at changing. We can look at, you know, the people who are incarcerated that were victims of abuse, that, you know, we as a society didn't recognize so much, right, and throughout history. You know, veterans who come home and perhaps they're struggling with trauma that, you know, when they were convicted, maybe that wasn't considered. You know, again, medical parole, as I mentioned earlier, we have so many people who are incarcerated who are simply unable to be a threat to society because they cannot even walk on their own. And how is that, you know, as a society, how does that look when we just continue to incarcerate people as opposed to finding ways for those folks who are not a threat to society to come home? So we're really looking at working with as many possible, you know, legislators, people on the ground, different advocacy organizations from across the political spectrum to come together and find ways that we can look at our prison population, which in Pennsylvania is astronomical, largely because of these mandatory life without parole sentences, to come together and find some sensible policy that we can agree on that will allow as many people as possible the opportunity to come home.
Thank you for sharing that information, Celeste. I wanted to ask Maria, I know that your role has transitioned with FAM, and currently you have this whole new role as Deputy Director of Policy. Can you talk to me about some of the things that you're working on? Because I know you're not just working on things in Pennsylvania, but with other states as well.
Yes, thank you. So I do want listeners and particularly our FAM members to know, and we've been telling them this, that I live in Pennsylvania. I love in Pennsylvania. I will always be involved in Pennsylvania. I am never leaving Pennsylvania. So folks know that. Celeste and I are working together. And as I said, I am definitely still handling all things clemency for FAM and still very much involved. But I'm also working in many other states now trying to push second look legislation and prison oversight. And so some of the highlights are in Michigan. There are a lot of issues with their prisons. And I know every state is different, right? We all have different sentencing laws. We all have different issues. But at the same time, the issues are universal. So the families in Pennsylvania are dealing with the same issues in terms of prison conditions very often as families in Michigan, as families in Missouri, as families in all these other states. And so we're working on independent prison oversight in places like Michigan and Missouri and many other states. I was in the capital of Missouri earlier this week which is Jefferson City, working on trying to eliminate the crack powder disparity under Missouri state law. So this is something FAM is working on at the federal level in DC as well. But there are 8 or 9 states nationwide, including Missouri, that still treat crack and powder differently, significantly differently. And so if I have, you know, 1 ounce of crack and Celeste has 18.75 ounces of powder cocaine, we are going to get treated the same, even though she has way more of what is scientifically the same drug than I do. And that's not right, right? That's unjust. It's racist in its application, as we've seen. And that's something that we need to stop. And so I was in Missouri this week working to change that. And there's a lot of support there. So I'm very hopeful that we'll be able to do that in Missouri this year. So that's a little bit. There's a lot more, but that's a little bit of what I've been working on.
Well, I love the fact that you're working on that, because, I mean, we see it happening all the time. And the fact that you guys are cracking down on these harsh sentences and bringing it to the light, you know, I commend you both on that. You know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about was the visit a prison. I know that a lot of people out there don't know about visit a prison, but can you guys kind of, you know, explain a little bit more of what that entails?
Gladly. Visit a prison is one of my absolute favorite things that FAM does, and I'm sure Maria agrees. You know, we have been encouraging our lawmakers, our decision makers, to visit a prison and spend some time with the people who are incarcerated there. So often people who are in power, who are writing the specific laws that are keeping people in prison far too long, have never even spent a minute with a person who's actually currently incarcerated or even formerly incarcerated. And, you know, mass incarceration affects all of us. You know, even if you aren't directly impacted, if you are a taxpaying member of society, you are impacted, because all of these things impact us. And our lawmakers work for us. We pay their salary. So if we want to see change, we have to say, go in and see the people we're asking you to make change for. And every time that happens, it's an incredible experience. Lawmakers leave, I feel, largely being changed, because they meet people inside who, you know, are not scary, right? They're not what you just see on the news and these, you know, it's not Hannibal Lecter. It's so many people who are just like us. They just made a mistake, just like we all make mistakes, right? But they, you know, are serving time incarcerated. And we really need to encourage as many people as possible to go inside of a prison. If you're a policymaker, you know, you should be inside of a prison. So everybody listening, please encourage your lawmakers to visit a prison. We've been so successful in Pennsylvania with having a lot of our lawmakers visiting prisons multiple times. I'm actually visiting SCI Rockview and SCI Senator with Rep. Paul Packett out in Center County on Monday. So we're really excited about that. So please encourage your lawmakers to visit a prison. Ask them to do it on social media. Call them. Show up at their office and ask them, hey, have you visited a prison? And if they are interested, have them reach out to us, and we'll do everything we can to help facilitate that.
I just want to kind of like elaborate on that. We do need our legislators to go into these prisons so that they can get a real life experience of what people are going through. We also need our community to like talk to their constituents. They need to talk to their legislators about, you know, going into these prisons and letting them know that, you know, people do need to have opportunities to come back out into society, especially if they are working on themselves and they're not the same age as when they went in there. But at the same time, how can we encourage people who are unaware or lack the knowledge about going and talking to their legislators?
You know, I think that's a really great question. So many people, I think, feel intimidated at first about going and asking their legislator things. But I want people to kind of reframe that thought. The people who work in those halls of power work for us. we have every right to demand that they do something. We have every right to question why they do or why they don't do something. And we have every right to ask and encourage somebody else to take their job if they're not doing what we need, you know, what the community wants them to do. And so don't be afraid to approach your legislator. They're just people with their jobs, just like we are people with our jobs. And we're expected to be good at our jobs, right? Just like we expect them to be good at their jobs. But they should be accountable to the community. And if enough community members go to them and demand that we see change and we see reform, we're going to have no choice but to do what the community wants.
You're right about that, Celeste. And I also want to elaborate on the fact that you at FAM, you guys are always talking about these beautiful stories, whether a person is incarcerated, whether it's a loved one that's talking about how they're fighting hard. You know, when Kevin Rings was on my show last week, I was talking about Lee Horton and the love story between him and his wife, because regardless of him being in prison for that amount of time, it never stopped the relationship that he had with his wife and her just fighting, you know, as much as she possibly could, and him fighting while he was in prison for his freedom, him and his brother. But going into that, I just want to say to the people out there, like, you have to fight for your loved ones. You have to get up. You have to talk. Me personally, I'm a big advocate for it. And, you know, I want to see people come home. And I want to talk about also the success of those who have came home from, you know, being incarcerated.
Yeah, let me jump in, Christina, because I want to say, you know, we know, and I think when folks think about it, they understand that families do the time with their loved ones.
Right.
It is living torture to have somebody that you love that is part of your life be inside. And we don't talk enough about all of the things that you miss, right? And how painful that is for the families, and how you can't parent children. You may not be able to have children. You can't sit by the bed of a sick or dying loved one. You can't share a meal with your children. You can't be part of the school routine. You can't, you know, go to a movie. You can't do all those normal things. And families suffer very, very much when their loved one is inside. It's also very, very lonely. And depending on, you know, who you're around and where you live and what, you know, your life is like, you may not even tell anybody that you have a loved one inside. It can be very lonely. It can be very stigmatizing. And so one of the ways to cut that down is to get connected with a group. And it doesn't have to be FAM, but obviously I know the most about FAM and I love FAM. And so come to one of our family calls. It's the first Thursday of every month at 7 o'clock Eastern time on Zoom. We have people from all over the state. We have tons of people in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. We also have tons of people in small rural areas. And you can come no matter where you are, and we will support you. And even if you don't want to talk, just listening to other people talking about their experience will reduce the isolation. And it's very important to get connected and have that community. And we see people slowly start to come out of their cells as they, you know, find that empowerment. So there's such empowerment in being connected. So please come and connect with us. And honestly, if FAM isn't your jam, then connect with another group, because there are lots out there that will match where you're at. And you are not alone.
Yeah, that's a really great point, Maria. And I want to echo, that's true. I mean, we understand, you know, and who can understand better than another family member who is going through the exact same experience? And it doesn't have to feel so lonely. We have built like this incredible group of Pennsylvania families, and families all over the country, of course, but Pennsylvania families who are so supportive of one another, who end up hanging out with each other, end up talking to each other whenever they're experiencing certain things. And some of them become some of the loudest and most powerful advocates, you know, for their loved ones through these experiences. And so, you know, we are so lucky to be a part of this group of powerful family members who come out and just, you know, support one another through the experience. But again, if you are experiencing this, there are so many people like you there are more people impacted by the justice system than you even know, more than likely. And so, you know, if you are feeling, you know, isolated or alone, please join our family call. We have a Facebook group called Families in Pennsylvania, where people are active there. They share their concerns. They share their situations. They share their victories. You know, they also share pictures of their families, their loved ones. They share about their visits. We talk to each other. It's a really, really uplifting space. We share resources. We share tools. We share, you know, advocacy things. So, you know, take a look at our Families in Pennsylvania and our Families in Action Facebook pages also. I think you'll really find something and somebody there who can be helpful to you.
So Maria and Celeste, like, I love you ladies. I admire you guys because you guys are doing beautiful things. But, you know, as women in these powerful roles, how do you manage work and personal life? Because it's a lot. I know it's a lot.
Yes, it is. I think it's funny because Maria and I probably have very different responses right now because we're just in different phases. My kids are both in college. And so for me, it's a little bit, you know, different. I'm entering a different phase in my life where I'm an empty nester for the first time in my life. So, you know, I'm finding myself with, you know, a little more free time and a little more work-life balance, which is nice, but also missing my kids terribly. I would give anything for them to be very, very small again so I could, you know, cuddle them. But right now they're both out of state. But yeah, so right, you know, a lot of what I do is I love to hang out with my friends. I love to watch true crime documentaries and listen to true crime podcasts. So I'm kind of a nerd that way. But yeah, Maria, how do you do it? You've got little ones.
So I have two toddlers and this amazing job that I love. And I guess there's no answer, but a few things that I think about with this question are one, that it can be very hard, and that things that really help me the most are, number one, you know, I live in Erie, Pennsylvania, which is where I have a village, right? I lived in Manhattan. I lived in Florida. I lived in Italy for a little bit, and I choose to be here in Erie, Pennsylvania, because I think it's important, you know, for me to have that so that I can do this work that I love and also be a present mom. So that really helps, having a village. I rely on them daily, and there are days that my kids have, you know, two aunties, a tia, a nonna, like they have all these people helping all day. And then the other thing I want to share is something that I learned from my previous boss, one of the most badass women that I know, Lisa Freeland, who is the chief public defender, federal defender for the Western District of Pennsylvania, and probably the most brilliant person that I've ever met in my life. And what I observed her do was be exceedingly busy, but whenever she turned her attention to something, she was fully, fully present. In a way that, you know it if you see it, where you have 1,000% of that person's attention when they turn it to you. And so I try really hard to do that. If I'm talking to a family, if I'm working on a piece of legislation, talking to you and Celeste today, you know, I try as best I can to be laser focused, because my, you know, I never have enough time for everything and everybody. And so the least that I can do is really, you know, be present when I am with them. And then lastly, just a boatload of coffee.
Huh. I love it. You ladies are resilient. You guys are remarkable. I love you both. I do want to say that when we're on the show, we do have a jail call. And a jail call for anybody who has been on a jail call, you know, including myself. You only have 15 minutes to talk, and that 15 minutes goes by so quickly. But on Jail Talk, what we're doing is 15 minutes where it's a call of action, and we want people out there that are listening, we want you guys to take 15 minutes out of your day to do something that you can be educated on when it comes to policy, the bills, or anything that we can change about this incarceration system. So what would you ladies like to tell our viewers out there that are listening today? What is that jail call?
Maria, you go first.
Okay. Well, I know it's probably, you know, I know we want to talk about visit a prison. So I'm going to let Celeste do that. And I'll say two simple things, which are one, come to one of our family calls first Thursday of the night, 7 p.m. Eastern time. We send out reminders by email. And you can put on your calendar every month. You know, if you can't make one month, that's okay. Come to the next one. But that is a way not just to find out about the action steps that we're really pushing that month that will help the most, but also just to find that community. Another thing that's very small, but isn't that small, that I want to say is just talk to someone about your views about this. Or if you do have an experience knowing someone, whether it's a loved one or an acquaintance or whoever, going through the system or, you know, being affected, talk about it. Because every time you talk about it in any small way out in the world, whether it's at Thanksgiving dinner, at a family party, at a bar, where, you know, around the water cooler at work, you are breaking down the stigma and changing culture, right? And ultimately, our laws reflect our culture. So the more that you do that, that you really are doing something. And I want people to know that anything you can do in any small way is valuable. You know, we're all at different places. We have different capacities, different things going on in our lives. Anything you can do is valuable. And I'll turn it over to Celeste to talk about visit a prison and, you know, just reiterate how you can get hooked up to that.
Yeah, sure. So visit a prison, again, I really, really want to reiterate how important it is for all of us as, you know, residents of some place to encourage the people who are in leadership, who are writing the laws, to go inside and spend time with our community members who are incarcerated. It's something that's extremely important. And again, we find it to be an absolutely incredible experience every single time. You know, one way you can do it is go to FAM, FAM.org. We have a bunch of resources for you to use. We have some stuff you can put on social media to encourage your lawmakers to visit the prison. We can help you find your lawmakers. If you don't know who your lawmakers are, we can help you figure out who your lawmakers are. I encourage you, if you don't already, follow your lawmakers on social media so that whenever we're trying to do campaigns about getting folks inside of a prison or for asking them to support different legislation or different issues, follow them on social media. You know, lawmakers are usually very, very active that way. You know, get familiar with your lawmakers and the people who are writing these laws. Find out what committees they're on, you know. Really find ways that if you want to plug in, to plug in. So again, go to FAM.org. Lots of resources on there for visit a prison. Reach out to your lawmakers. Really talk to them about your personal story. If you have a loved one in prison, ask your lawmaker to visit them. Ask your lawmaker to go inside and say, please visit, you know, my child. Please visit my brother, my sister, my mom, my dad, you know, and tell them their personal story. Storytelling is very, very, very powerful. And there are so many ways to get plugged into this work, to advocate. As Maria said, we're all in different, you know, different places. We have different capacities. Everything you say is valuable. So as Maria mentioned, please talk about it. If you're impacted, if you have a loved one who's impacted, the best thing we can do is be proud of that person. If we love that person, we want to see change for that person, but also for our community. And just become, as you know, an advocate. And again, plug into FAM.
Can I just say thank you, ladies, for both being on my show? You know, I love you. I think you guys are the bomb. Anybody in Philly, Celeste and Maria, I mean, these women are doing amazing things. They're trying to help people come home. And I just want to say thank you, ladies, both for being on Jail Talk today. I want to say to the audience out there listening, I will be on every Friday at 4 p.m. We're going to be talking about ways that you guys can listen to the changes that we need in these communities. Next on, we have DBI Live, and I will see you guys back next Friday.
Thank you, Christina,
so much for having us, Christina. You're the best.
I love you guys.
I love you too.
Nobody like you do. I can't lose when I'm with you. I can't just lose. important. Nobody do body like you do, you do. In a drop top ride with you, I feel like Scarface. Like that white bitch with the bob, I'll be your main one. Let's take this argument back up to my place. Sex remind you I'm not violent, I'm your day one. We had shit, yeah, it was magic, yeah. Smash and grab shit, yeah. Nasty habits take a hold when you're not here. Ain't a home when you're not here. Hard to grow when you're not here, I'm saying. I can't lose when I'm with you. How can I snooze and miss the moment? You just too important. Nobody do body like you do. I can't lose when I'm with you. How can I snooze and miss the moment? You just too important. Nobody do body like you do. You do. You do, I can't.